Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Academy Mortgage in studio, talking about all things credit, mortgage, and just kind of what's going on out in the marketplace. Want to send our best wishes out to Russ Clark and his daughter. Had a couple of emergencies this morning. So Jonathan Porter is in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do we call you Jonathan or Johnny, or how formal do we want to be here
today? We could do Johnny. That's okay. Fine. All right. That's how I'm known on the radio. So
good morning. We're roughing through the board here just a little bit. So it's been a good morning so far.
Beautiful morning. Went for a walk and then got a phone call
and
saying,
said, get over here.
Yeah, get over here. Let's do this. I've done it once with Russ in, so it's I kind of got the gist of it.
So you're not a first timer.
No. It's a second time.
All right. So should be all good. But I'm going to bounce some things off of you because, it's always fun to get some people's perspectives. Mm-hmm. So do you as a consumer pay any attention to interest rates?
I should.
You should, but do you generally?
No, I don't.
You go about your day and you live your life and you do your work and you go to eat and whatever you do. Mm-hmm. So for most people, they don't realize that interest rates have already started rising. So if I told you that I believe by Christmas, interest rates on mortgages are going to start with a 6, does that shock you? Does that sound high? Does that sound low? Do you care?
I'm indifferent, I guess.
Okay. So yeah. It's not a, oh my gosh, it's going to be the sky is falling and Chicken Little and all that stuff. Nothing's hitting you in the head.
No.
Interest rates are going up. And I want to say at a rapid clip. Okay. But if you think 2 years ago, interest rates were in the 3s. Now I believe they're going to be in the 6s. That's basically 100% increase in interest rates over about a 2-year run. That's percentage wise. That's significant. Not unlike a gallon of gasoline. What was gasoline a year and a half ago?
Oh, it was 2-something. It was great. It felt awesome.
And now it's doubled. And so kind of the same thing. You know, you're almost $5 a gallon gas. I mean, some parts of the country, it is $6 a gallon gas. But so things are becoming a little bit more expensive. And it's so interesting that, again, the reason I ask you as a consumer who may not pay attention. So a 6% interest rate doesn't shock or not shock you. It's just neutral then, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's what's funny is I have some millennials and some of the Gen Zs that come in and they go, oh my gosh, interest rates are in the 5s. I don't want a 5% interest rate. That's too high. What do you think the average interest rate on a credit card is right now?
Ooh, I would say it's higher than 5.
Significantly higher.
Yeah.
So what's your gut tell you?
11.
Okay, so the average APR on new credit card offered in the month of April, and so these stats are fluid, the average interest rate across the U.S. was 16.11.
Oh, okay. So
the maximum interest rate offered by credit cards is 23.25%. The previous, let's see here, on the no annual fee credit cards. So typically you have to have a much higher credit score and do some other qualification for a no annual fee credit card. The average interest rate on a no fee credit card was 15.47%. Now, isn't it interesting that people will talk to mortgage lenders like myself and say, oh my gosh, 5%, 6%, that's way too high on a mortgage. But you happily accept high teens and stuff on credit cards. Why? Because it's a lifestyle.
I guess we're used to it. It's just what we've been doing.
You're used to it, but nobody ever compares it either. Mm-hmm. You get your credit card, and I don't care whether you go out to eat, you go buy a big screen TV, you go put a new set of tires on your car. You pull out the card and you get what you want, that immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. So for whatever reason, we accept it on a credit card. Now, what do you think about cars?
Cars.
Okay. What is the average interest rate on a new and used car with mediocre credit? I'm not saying great credit. I'm not saying, horrible credit. Like I could do a mortgage for somebody with a 600 credit score. And you'd have a normal FHA loan, decent, not great, but decent interest rates. Let's take that same person with a 600 credit score. What do you think their interest rate is on a car? See, I'm stumping you here.
Yeah,
in the
no.
This Don't is you got, wish you didn't answer the phone this morning?
No, I'm good. I need to know this. So 17%.
Okay. Well, no, let's not get too crazy.
Okay.
Here. So
I don't know.
15.96.
Okay, well, that was too crazy then, 17?
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Okay.
So, if you went to and when they say the average new car. So you go to a lot and you buy a brand new car, that 600 FICO, maybe in the 9, 9.5 range. Used car, which is what most people are buying with a 600 credit score, because they're not going to go buy
the
very expensive
one. Yeah, you can't get
the... You're going to be 15.96. And again, I turn around and say, isn't it interesting that people will go, oh my gosh, the interest rate on that house is too high when it's in the high fives and maybe even touch a six, but you happily accept a high teens credit card. You happily accept a mid-teens auto loan. And if you think I'm not being accurate, talk to anybody who might be new in the military, just establishing their job and their credit, and let's say an E3, somebody who's been in the military 2 years, they've kind of started their career. How many of those men and women do you see driving the Mustang, the Camaro, the used car, but the really expensive hot rod kind of a car? Those guys and gals are paying middle teen interest rates, and some of them even higher. And we as a society completely accept that, but oh my gosh, if your interest rate on your mortgage hits 6, the sky is falling.
So you're saying it's a mindset.
Well, it all is, because let's look at it this way. Do you have to live somewhere?
Yes. Okay. I would. That would be a definite yes.
Okay, so you're going to have a home. Do you have to have that elegant, bougie, hot rod sports car?
Definitely. It depends on the style of chick I'm trying to get. If I'm trying to get a hot chick, you know, that's impressed by the bougie car, then, you know, yeah, I guess
well,
I need it.
So there again, it's a lifestyle choice, because it doesn't matter. At some point, you're going to pay a mortgage. It might not be yours. So the person who's renting, are you paying a mortgage?
No. They're paying somebody else's mortgage.
Correct. So you are paying
a mortgage. You're paying a mortgage, just not your own. Yeah.
Now, let's turn the prism for a second. If you have your own mortgage, you're paying principal and interest and your taxes and insurance, the rest of it. But you're paying some down to principal each and every month, and you have, let's say it goes to 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. You're paying 6% interest. If you pay rent, does any of that money come back to your pocket?
No.
No. So in my view, that's 100% interest.
Ah.
I have no stake in that. I don't get to participate when the home goes up in value. I don't get to pay down the principal. Literally every penny I give that landlord goes right out the window, and it's 100% interest. So the mindset is, we need to get and forgive me, because again, I always say this, the people that listen to Russ's shows, typically a little bit more educated, a little bit more affluent. They kind of have their brains screwed in correctly. But we got to get some of these younger people that haven't really seen a declining market in terms of affordability, where interest rates go up. You know what? Mid fives, high fives, low sixes is not a bad interest rate. And I'm not that old. Mm-hmm. My first house was 7%.
Okay. Now, what year?
That was in 99.
99. Okay.
Okay. Now, when you say that, you go, okay, wait a minute, you know, 7%, how do you know whether the home is affordable? It's just a percentage of your income. And as a industry, it's typically been about a third of your income is what should be for your house payment. So I don't care if it's back in 1920, I don't care if it's in the year 2020, and anywhere in between, you really should have about a third of your income or less going to the house payment. And if interest rates go to 10%, make sure not more than about a third of your income is going to the house payment. If interest rates drop to 1%, same rule. Why? Because you still have food, you still have electric, you still have insurance on your car. You still, for you, Johnny, you still have to have money saved so you can impress the hot chick and
yes,
take her out to dinner
definitely.
And all that good stuff. So that mindset, though, I just need everybody to help start teaching your nieces, your nephews, your friends, your coworkers, that why do we accept without question interest rates that are in the teens for credit cards and interest rates that could be 10, 12, 15% for a lot of people on an auto, but we really kind of sneer at a 5 or 6% interest rate on a house.
So you're saying it's a mindset. So obviously we've been taught this mindset. It's not something new. It's something that we're kind of just used to.
Well, it's a mindset and it's a salesmanship. So think about it this way. If you turn the TV on from a mortgage lender perspective, what do you see on TV all the time?
Rates.
That's the only thing a mortgage lender advertises for the most part is, you know, here's your rate. What's your rate?
You get a great rate. You got to get a good rate.
Now, what does an auto dealership typically advertise?
The car?
The payment. Yeah. Hey, you can have this car for this payment, this payment, this payment. They don't talk about the term of the loan. They don't talk about length. They don't talk about the interest rate. They do if you listen to the announcer who's speaking so fast.
Really fast, yeah.
Or you read the fine print that you need the magnifying glasses.
It's down
that,
at the bottom. That,
yeah.
Yep.
So they talk about payment, payment, payment. And so you sell a car with payment. You sell a mortgage with rate. When you go, let's say, buy that 85-inch big screen TV, what do they typically advertise you? No payments for 12 months or no payments for 18 months. So they talk about having now, paying later. We just get sold different things in different ways. Mm. And unfortunately, because we've been so geared or conditioned that I have to know my rate on a house, that's all anybody ever looks at.
Now, so then we're sold this, so we're conditioned by the ones that are selling it.
Mm-hmm. And, okay. And you can see exactly, you don't even have to know anything about the market. Watch the TV commercials, and you can tell whether interest rates are going up or down, because some of the major, and I want to say call center shops, that they basically put phone numbers out there and they want you to call. You can see when interest rates are going up. Weirdly enough, they start advertising cash out refinances. When interest rates are going down, they start advertising rate and term refinances. When things are going weirdly wrong, they start advertising purchases. But they're still out there advertising, trying to get you to look at the interest rate for the program that they're offering, as opposed to saying, hey, Johnny, what's the right thing for you? Do you need to buy a home? Do you need to refinance? Should we restructure your finances? You know, and again, having a good team, like what we typically say is, when Tom's here, okay, you've got a financial planning guy who works on your assets. Myself as the debt, I'm kind of the debt guy. I'm the guy who gives you the biggest debt. But neither of us, I get to see everything, but your tax planner needs to look at how you strategically manage everything to make sure that your debt is taken care of, and that not necessarily the debt, but the cost of your income in terms of a debt to the IRS. Mm-hmm. Because when you start talking about, hey, a third of your income should go out the door to your house, how much of your income percentage-wise goes to taxes?
Oh,
do you know?
Yeah, no, but somebody needs to know.
But isn't it interesting, though? We all, it's kind of like the big fish story. Do you ever fish?
Yes, yeah, when I was a kid, well, younger. Yeah.
Okay, and did you ever say, oh, Dad, I got a fish this big, or it was XYZ? You talk about the fish story, and you say, here's the fish that I bought. What does everybody brag about now? And I'll give you the answer is, hey, my credit score is X, or I got an interest rate of Y. And those are the two big fish stories. But nobody knows the percentages of everything else. When I ask people, hey, what's the interest rate on your auto? And I don't know. And they literally have to go find their statements because they just don't know. But you could tell somebody at the drop of a dime what the interest rate is on your house. Why is that? And then conversely, if I said, hey, Johnny, how much percentage-wise did you pay of your income to the IRS and to the state? You don't know.
No, I don't know. I know I'm not happy with it, but...
But there's a percentage we should all know. We should know that it's whether it's 10% or 20%, whatever that percentage is, because just because the house may or may not be affordable, man, what's the rest of the debt? And here's the takeaway. I don't care if people compare interest rates. That's not... You know, if you and your neighbor both bought a home and you said, hey, yours is 3% because you bought 2 years ago and he's buying it for 5% this year, who's in a better position? And by the way, this is a trick question. Is the guy who's paying 3% or the guy who's paying 5% in a better position?
Well, it sounds like 3, but you told me it's a trick question. So
yeah, see, I led the way.
I'm going to reserve my answer for...
The answer is you don't know until you see this guy or gal financially naked, because I don't know how much debt they're both carrying. What if the guy who's paying 3% has a boat and 2 cars and 5 credit cards all maxed out, and the guy who's paying 5% has no other debt whatsoever? That guy may be in a way better position. But again, from a bigger fish story, we all say, oh, I got mine at 3% and you're at 5%, so I'm way better than you are. No, the guy who's got money left in the bank and can comfortably afford his debt is way better.
Gotcha. So it's then that's reframing and changing the mindset, right? Because you're looking at it from a bird's eye view.
Yeah, you have to. And that's where, you know, jokingly, but not jokingly, I say I get to see everybody financially naked. I see their income, I see their assets, I see their debts, I see their payment history, and I see the historical, are you getting better or getting worse? And that's what we all need to look at, is kind of reframing our mindset and talking about, are we moving in the right direction? Because all we're looking for is progress. We're not looking for perfection. So we'll talk about that way more after the break. This is Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. All right, Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Johnny having just a smidge of a issue. You know, here's what's fun is it's okay to learn and try new things. There's no stress.
Yeah.
There really isn't. And talking about that stress, what's interesting to me is when people come into my office, did you know there was a university, and I forget the university. I want to say it was Mississippi, but there's a university that did a study that people walking into a mortgage lender's office, there's more nervousness and stress and tension in their body than an astronaut ready to blast off into space.
I did not know that, but it makes sense. I think I went to your office one day and you helped me. You said, I'm going to look at your finances. And that immediately, I was sweating. Yeah. The sweat was there. So I get it.
And, you know, it's funny, though. It's because we've never done it before. And, you know, I'm sure everybody does that. The surgeon who operates for their very first procedure is probably nervous. I would assume nervous is all get out. You know, the drag racer, that it's the very first time they're ever going to punch that throttle and do 200 plus miles an hour down the quarter mile strip, probably nervous is all get out. Most people walking into a mortgage lender's office, especially for the first time, nervous. They don't know what to expect. And what they know is somebody like me is actually going to judge them. And it's not in a judgy way, but
it
that's
wasn't
the way it's taken.
It wasn't when I went. You made me feel comfortable. You do have a way to make you feel comfortable, and you wanted to see how much Starbucks I was buying at the time. I wasn't comfortable with the amount of Starbucks I was buying at the time, but you just made it make sense.
Yeah, dude. For everybody listening, three times a day is just a little excessive.
Yeah, no, I wasn't that much. But
that's the thing, is it's not judgy, but people subconsciously, they understand that if it's not an immediate amazing yes right now, something that they're doing is incorrect. So there is that judgmental perspective. But when you stop and talk about, okay, wait a minute, this is progress. It may not be today, but it might be in 6 months. It might be in a year. But some of the choices that we make have to lead us to where we're going to go. So if I want to lose 10 pounds, I probably shouldn't go out for a double cheeseburger and a large basket of fries and a chocolate milkshake tonight, right?
Yeah. Now, priorities.
You know, priorities. I may really want that double cheeseburger. I mean, and my mouth is watering right now saying that. But you know what? I probably need a salad. I probably need to – I don't have to go work out for 3 hours today at the gym and be a monster, but I probably should do something. I should go walking or jogging or do something to lead me in the right direction. And that's really all this financial credit stuff is you're not going to go from a 600 to an 800 credit score tomorrow, but you could go from a 600 to an 800 in the next 12 months. And you don't need an 800 FICO, but you go back to those credit cards. Again, here's the things that we go, hey, let me apply for a cash back credit card. Did you know the average interest rate on a cashback credit card is 19.08%.
I did not know that.
So you see these credit cards that are saying, hey, we'll give you 1% or 3% or 2%, and we'll give you more if you spend it on these certain things. How do they come up with 1 or 2 or 3% to give you? They clearly have to bill somebody else.
Yeah, somebody's getting stuck.
So you're going to charge 18, 19, 20%. Here's the average, 19.09 or 08%. So the average person is paying 19%, and the really smart person who pays their bill off each and every month and really profits or benefits from that 1 or 2% cash back gets 2%. Well, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but if they're going to give away, let's say 3%, and they're charging 19, doesn't that mean the credit card company really kept 16%?
Exactly.
So, you know what? Great business. But that there's a whole group of people that love to do those things, but then they don't pay the balance off each and every month. So it's an absolute waste. Credit cards are great for emergency perspective. Credit cards are great for not having to carry cash, having some ways to track things. Russ talks about this all the time. He uses that app called Mint that everything aggregates into one app.
Yeah, he actually showed me that and it showed me how to use that. And I was very grateful because I was able to use that to build up and monitor my expenses and help build up my credit.
Now, if you say, okay, what's the next progression? The next progression is you get a cashback credit card and you start putting all of your monthly expenses on it, but you make sure that that cashback credit card is paid off when the bill comes due out of your checking account. So you start rearranging your spending and you direct it in a way that, hey, I really can make 2 or 3% cash back, but I know I'm spending cash. It's on my credit card, but I'm spending cash. And if you change that mindset where you go, I'm not going to carry a balance. I don't want to pay the credit card companies. And I will, you know, if there's an emergency or something happens, clearly everybody has emergencies. But if the majority of your purchases, like when you go put gas in your car, how do you pay for it?
I do pay with a cashback credit card.
Okay. Do you pay that card off at the end of the month?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So on this topic, somebody taught me to look at it as a game. And like, so we have these apps that we use. And I have the Credit Karma. I got Mint. I have these certain apps. I have my, I use the Apple card that gives cash back for certain purchases. And I look at it as a, actually like I'm playing a game on my phone because I want to make sure that I'm getting that money, not the banks, nobody else. So if I turn it into a game where I'm trying to best them, I'm winning at the end of the month.
It is a game. And all of it, the gamification of everything, look at half the things you do. Why does everybody love to get likes and hearts and everything else on whether it's Facebook or Instagram? It's just turned being social into a game. Hey, I got 27 likes. You only got 26. I must have won that game, whatever it is. But the gamification of your credit and your spending habits, absolutely. It's literally redirecting how you can spend your money. Now, was it Mint? Was it Russ? What was it that allowed you to shift your mindset and go, hey, I can game this thing?
So it was actually one of my previous employers that looked at it as a game. I would go into work and he would look at it as a game. He would check his like Credit Karma. He would check his credit score every morning. And I wasn't paying attention to it. This is about like maybe 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago. And I was thinking like, oh, I'm never going to have good credit. I messed up a lot when I was a kid, younger, made a bunch of foolish mistakes getting credit cards with the high interest rate. And I got in debt. I had a repo. It was like, it's never going to happen. He said, no, this is a game, man. It's us against them. Let's do it. And he sat me down in front of the computer. He says, this is what I do. He says, download this app. And the first one that I got was Credit Karma. He said, download this app, and then we're going to build your credit back up. Just look at it. Look at it in the morning. And I'm like, I don't want to look at it. I cringed. I was like, I'm never going to come out from this. It was horrible. And I said, you know what? I'm going to adopt that mentality because he's successful. He owns his business. I'm working for him. He must know something. And so I ended up doing that. And I would check the app every morning. I was a lot of cringes in the beginning, but then I found out what are the things that I had to pay off. Who was I in debt to that I was kind of skirting and not paying attention to? And let me just do this little by little. And then I'd have cash on the back of everything that I had. I would have a little bit of, I'd put stuff away so I could pay this with this, but I had the cash value of it, right? Mm-hmm. Their actual tangible cash. So it wasn't, didn't hurt as much.
Yeah.
And so I turned it into a game, and now it's in the 700s.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but think of it. How long did it take you to get to there? Was it
a few years?
6 months? A couple years.
Okay. Well, a couple of years to get where I'm at now. Yeah. But to get starting to trend upward, yeah, it took a few months to start.
But that's the thing is there's no magic pill. You're not going to take a pill and have that the old school Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, body.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to take a pill and have an 800 FICO if you're a 500 now. You're not going to get your debt absolved right away. But you just work in the direction that you want to go, and it's that progress thing. For whatever reason, we expect perfection out of ourselves, but mm-hmm. we're okay letting everybody else progress towards it. Like, you know, if you said, hey, anybody who has kids, you know what? If they went to go walk the first time and they fell over, you would never go, oh, dude, you're never going to walk.
Yeah, so that's
just,
it.
Don't ever try that again. You're done.
Yeah, you're done.
But we allow everybody else the grace to progress towards where they need to be, but we expect that we have perfection, or like what you said is kind of that ostrich. I'm going to put my head in the sand. I don't want to look at any of this.
That's where I was.
And that's where most people are. There's several groups of people, and there's one who they know everything and they have it under control. There's one that believes that everything is perfect and they're just oblivious. And there's one that knows there's problems and they just have their head in the sand and they just don't really want to fix it. And they just assume they're going to be this way forever. And what frustrates me is if you said you have to work for the next year, and let's say you ate bologna sandwiches and Top Ramen and Hormel chili and just inexpensive meals and didn't do that and didn't go anywhere, but you worked really hard and saved money for a year, could you buy a house?
Yes.
Yeah. But isn't it interesting? A lot of people go, eh, I really don't want to do that. I'm going to go out to the movies tonight. Let's go out to dinner. Let's make ourselves feel good right now.
You know, part of the game was doing that, making the sacrifices. That became part of the game. And so since it was part of the game, the sacrifices, now they stung, but they didn't have the same sting. Mm-hmm. It was like almost I'd get like a little bit of a rush of like, I'm not going to do that while everybody else is doing that because I'm in a game now and you play a game to win.
All right, so here's a game. You ready for this?
Okay, let's go.
What percentage of your income do you save every month?
What percentage do I save?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know by percentage. I just kind of...
Okay, so here's the game. Here, and this is the game that I play with my staff, is I want you to save, start with 5% of your income, then go to 10%, and then go from there. Now, if you have a 401k, you know, we've talked about this before. Most 401ks will match up to 6% of your income. So I really want everybody to dump 6% of their income into their 401k or their employer-sponsored retirement program because of the matches. So as an example, at Academy Mortgage, when my staff dumps in 6% of their income, Academy matches 50%. So if they dump in $100, Academy gives them a free 50. If they dump in $1,000, Academy gives them a free 500. That's a 50% return on your
money. Wow.
Okay. But I need you to put 6% of your income away. So now you can say, man, I'm saving 6% of my income. Great. What does it look like when we say, let's go 8? Take 2% more of your income and go put it in a money market fund so you start saving money. Or put it in your college fund for your kids, your 529 plan or something. Great. You've done 8% for 3 or 4 months. Could we get it to 9? You know, and then you start.
Yeah.
And you struggle to get it to there. And then you go, you know what? I can get it to 10. I can get it to a double.
That's
digit.
The game. Yeah, you're getting me excited right now.
But here's the thing. If you talk to your friends and I said, hey, Johnny, find me 10 of your friends and ask them percentage-wise how much of their income do they save, most of them are going to say what?
Yeah, they don't know.
I don't know. Or I don't save anything.
Yeah,
or,
most of the time you don't save anything. A lot of my friends live in debt. But
and that's the truth. That's what most Americans do is they spend what they have and they hope there's something left as opposed to flip the switch and turn it into that gamification that you talked about and say, I'm going to save first and then I'm going to do everything else second. Because there's no doubt that everybody listening to this, and even those that aren't listening, those that are not smart enough to listen to these shows, mm-hmm. you know, people can save money first and make a choice that you don't have to go rent a movie at Redbox. You don't necessarily have to go out to eat. You don't have to go do whatever it is. And I'm not saying don't go out to eat. Some of my best friends in town are restaurateurs. I mean, I love going out to eat. I love supporting those guys and gals, and I love going out for a nice meal. But it's a reward It's a celebration. It's a social event. It's not a meal.
Yeah, it has a place.
And most people, unfortunately, they go, hey, I'm a working adult. I need to go to lunch. So I'm going to go drive somewhere and go to lunch. And then I'm going to stop by and get something for dinner on the way home because I don't want to cook. And all of a sudden, you eat out two times. And like you used to do, get a Starbucks coffee or something. And again, no offense to Starbucks or any of the other coffee shops. Love those things. But, you know, you go out to breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and all of a sudden you're eating out three times in a day and you don't even realize it. That's a huge difference to what you can save.
Yes. And to go into further detail about that, I did start making coffee at home.
Nice.
After that, because the awareness of it, it's like, wait a minute, what am I doing with my money? Why am I doing this?
Now, so again, zero negativity to any of the coffee shops because I love going out and having a cup of coffee with, you know, somebody and having a good social chat. But when you go out to coffee now, is it a reward and an experience or is it just a cup of coffee?
Oh, no, it's an experience.
That's the difference.
And like you said, before it was just like the drive-through, so it wasn't really anything more than that, right? It was just like, go get it, get your fix, go on. You just spent like $5-6 depending on how foo-foo you want to get. But
And what you're talking about now is routine.
Mm-hmm.
Most people get so set in a routine, they can't see, you know, the proverbial forest through the trees. They're the ostrich with their head in the sand. Your routine of going through those drive-throughs is what artificially pulled money out of your pocket and you didn't realize what you were spending. What if what you've done, okay, let's do some things so I can save some money and turn what I was using as a routine into a reward and an experience. Like if you went to Disneyland every day for the next 365 days, would it even be a reward or fun anymore?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Disneyland anymore. It'd be a job.
Right. Well put. But if you said, hey, I'm going to go there once a year and maybe it's Halloween and see the decorations and stuff. Okay, now it's kind of fun. Now it's something that was an experience and you notice things when you're there because it's not just there all the time. If you want to play the game, where's the savings? So I would challenge you. Are you putting 5%, 6% of your income away somewhere? That's first. Then it's the coffee. Then it's the meal. Then it's the car. Then it's the rent. Then it's the new shoes, whatever it is. And it's so funny that people are quick to pull out the credit card and look at what we've done as a society. You could order something online and have it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
that easy. That easy.
You want those new pair of shoes. You want that new watch. You want that new hat. You want those new pair of Beats headphones. You could have them tomorrow on your credit card. And we just said, you know, the cash back credit card that you have one. So your interest rate is probably 19.08% or something like that. You could have it tomorrow. But if I said, hey, I need you to put $500 in cash away in investment this month. By the way, there's two business days.
Yeah,
not,
we don't got much.
Could you do that today? This month?
So I could, but would I? Is, I guess. But now that you're challenging me, though, like I like a little bit of that challenge.
So the challenge for me would be, okay, let's start fresh. So come May 1st, the month of May, you need to put 5% of your income, whatever that is, take 5% of your income and put it away. And then as you do that for a month or two, if it feels easy, ratchet it up quicker. If it feels difficult, start looking at what the budget is and say, hey, how much am I really spending on entertainment? How much am I spending on utilities? I mean, I know people that said, hey, I really like to keep my house at 74 degrees. Let me turn it to 75 and whatever that savings is, I'm going to save that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, one of my staff members, bless her heart, you know, just quality individual, but she will go from her house to the store, take the stuff back home. Then she'll go to the next store, take the stuff back home. Then she'll go to the grocery store, take that stuff home. I'm like, wait.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Do you know how much money you're spending in fuel?
Yeah, well, you don't want to do that now.
But she didn't realize it because she didn't put the one and one and one is three together. She just, okay, you put the card in the pump and you fill your tank when it's empty. But when we calculated out some of the miles, and this took a while to figure out where she was spending so much money in gas. It was not an aha moment for her. But you look at it and you say, geez, you could cut your fuel bill by probably $100 a month just by do a circle. you know, you don't do the groceries first. Clearly, you're not going to leave the milk in the car mm-hmm. when you're going to get the kids' stuff wherever. But, you know, you do this in a routine, kind of like when if you said FedEx, UPS, the Postal Service, I promise you they have their routes mapped out for the most fuel-efficient and time-saving map for their delivery people. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you go to any of these restaurants, you see these big semi-trucks delivering food, I promise you that semi-truck doesn't come from Phoenix, go to Round Table Pizza, then drive back to Casa Grande, deliver something, then come back down here and deliver down to Prison Hill. No, they map it in a route that saves them the most time and the most fuel. That's all she needed to do. That little flip for her, now she does things kind of in a organized pattern. She saves about $100 a month in fuel. Guess where she's putting that?
She's saving it.
So she ratcheted up her 401k,
okay.
another $100. Now that $100 extra is going in her 401k. How much does Academy give her as a match?
50%.
So now she's putting $150 more in her 401k every month, times that by 12. That's $1,800 a year she's saving just by rearranging how she's driving.
Just because she got some awareness about, you know, bad habit, nothing nefarious about it, but it was just a bad habit that she wasn't even aware of.
Right.
So became aware of this bad habit, said, put some structure around it. Let's get some logistics behind how you're going to go shopping. And now 18 a year, mm-hmm. 1800 a year.
1800 a year she's, to drive a different circle.
Wow. That's a great story.
It's a great story, but here's what really kind of depresses me sometimes. How many stories are there out there like this that you just don't know and nobody will ever fix? Because A, they don't have the awareness that you mentioned, or B, they don't have a mentor, coach, guide who's going to go, hey, ding dong, this needs to be changed in just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think of, I don't care whether it's the interest that you're carrying on your credit cards. Man, we could all rearrange that stuff. I don't care if it's the route that you're driving or the breakfast, lunch, dinner that you do daily. I promise you there's things. And, you know, if you talk to some of the AC guys, what do they always say? Change your filter once a month because your efficiency goes up considerably if you have clean filters every 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're telling me if I spend $4 on a new filter, my efficiency can go up. And we all know what the electric bills are like here in the summertime. I'm willing to spend $3 or $4 on a new filter every 30 days if I can increase the efficiency of my AC unit. Now, why don't most people do it?
Well, people probably don't know. They're not educated that that could happen.
Maybe, or they're lazy, or it's just beyond the routine. They just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get to walk into a lot of homes because there's clients of mine that say, hey, come check this out. And, you know, you look at some of these homes and even the home inspectors, I get to see almost every home inspection for my clients that send them, that do them. And you see the pictures that these home inspectors send, and some of these air filters look like they're just caked in mud and they're concaved in because the suction is pulling them in so hard because they're plugged. And you think, what did the former owner's electric bill do? And what would it have looked like if they had taken that filter and just changed it every 30 days?
Yes.
You know, and I'm going to say the same thing what Russ talks about. How many people drive with tire pressure that's too low?
Mm-hmm.
And they're running soft tires with too low a pressure. If they had filled them up to the recommended tire pressure, they'd get way better fuel efficiency.
Yeah, you get better gas mileage.
But how often, and bless her heart, my mom probably didn't check her tire pressure all that often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of monies could she have saved if she checked her tire pressure every 30 days in her car over a 20-year lifespan?
Right. And some of these things are saying, like, obviously, we don't think about daily. But if you have that goal of buying a house, these are some of the things we could think about. And then that becomes the game. Well, I want to buy a house. So what could I look at? My air filter, my tire pressure, my routine, my routes, things like that. That just becomes part of the game. And then you or what I'm not going to eat, what I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I got so far into the game. AC was part of it. Right. So when I would sweat at my house because the AC wasn't at, like, I liked it at 74, and I did ratchet it up, and then people would come over and, like, have people, it's warm in here. It's like, yeah, it is.
No,
it's part of the game. Like, I'm sweating, you know, but I'd turn it down when they'd come, but you know what I mean.
But there's a choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sitting here in the radio studio that most people can't see. And every one of the, well, actually, not all of them are CFLs. You've got a couple of CFL bulbs, and it looks like a couple of regular incandescent bulbs. So, mm-hmm. you know, why did these get changed to CFLs? Somebody wants to be more energy efficient. Why haven't these? Because these probably aren't on all that often, mm-hmm. you know. So you make the choice. Some people need to go through and change out their light bulbs to LEDs.
Oh, I've done that too.
Okay, did that save you money?
Yes.
So you notice those things. But again, you look around and there's some people that they go, oh, I really don't want to spend that extra money on an LED bulb. Well, yeah, it is an investment right now that will pay dividends over time, because for the next, I don't know, 10 years, 20 years, whatever that life bulb, that lifetime of that bulb is going to save you money, assumably. Now, there's ones that are not going to save you money, so make sure you're making a good decision. But everything we have is that. And it could be literally rearranging where you spend your money. And I'm not saying don't spend it. I'm saying rearrange how you spend it, where you spend it, the routine. So go back to the credit cards, which is one of the things that, again, I'm the guy who gives people the biggest debt that you're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's my job to help people get out of debt and get into a better financial picture. Because when I look at credit reports, if I said anecdotally, I don't have this stat, but anecdotally, a teacher, what do you believe the average teacher makes in, say, Arizona?
Mm.
Let's say brand new first-year teacher.
First year, 40,000.
I'm going to guess that's pretty accurate. Somewhere high 30s, low 40s when you figure all of the other stipends and Prop mm-hmm. 301 monies, et cetera. So let's say 40 grand. That same first-year teacher, the average teacher, what do you think I see anecdotally from me in terms of student loan balances?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to phone a friend on that one.
I typically see about $75,000 to $80,000 in student loans.
Wow.
Now, you know what? If that's what it took you to get the career, great. It's okay. But you have that amount of student loan that you know at some point you're going to have to pay back, unless you go to work for a Title I school and do some of these other things. But at the same time, wait a minute, that student loan that is generally deferred while people are teaching and their income is low, they know that is there, but they put their head in the sand and then they go get the credit cards. And now that same first-year teacher that I anecdotally see that has that $75,000 to $80,000 in student loans also has $10,000 to $14,000 in credit card debt. Mm-hmm. Now, the average, if you said the average credit card balance for a U.S. citizen, so keep in mind that is all the way from a Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, who probably carries no balance, to a brand new, let's call it a college student who's racking up credit card debt faster than mommy and daddy can pay for it. The average human being in the U.S., what do you think they carry in credit card balances?
I'm 30,000.
Oh, you're way high. I'm glad you went high, actually. So it's about 8.
Oh, okay.
So the average person, when you figure all people who could have a credit card in the U.S., about 8 grand. Now, clearly, there's people who never will, and there's some people who are never going to get out of the credit card balances short of potentially a bankruptcy. But $8,000 of credit card debt, most of the first, second-year teachers that I see are carrying more debt than that, because it's taken them that to get up and functioning in life. Mm. So let's say they went to school in Missouri and they get recruited to Yuma, Arizona. They've got moving expenses. They've got lifestyle startup. They've probably got furniture to buy because they moved out of the dorms and the college. So let's be honest, it's expensive.
And they're putting all that on the credit card.
That's where most of them are putting it. Because again, let's think that college student, and I don't care what profession you're going to go into, but if you've been living in the dorm and you've had, you know, family helping support you, how do you establish your apartment? Not even buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
You go into a 3-bedroom apartment. Name the furniture you would have to buy.
No, you got to have a bed. You got to have a couch, right?
And I'm going to guess way more than that. You know, a couple couches, an entertainment center, probably a TV. You've got your bedroom furniture. You may or may not need some appliances. You're probably going to need a second bedroom set of furniture or an office set of furniture. And all of a sudden you think, man, I got to spend like $5,000 worth of furniture, or I'm going to spend $10,000 of furniture. Plus, I got to get the electronics that I may or may not need. Plus, oh my gosh, I'm moving to, let's say you moved to Juneau, Alaska to be a teacher, but you went to school at ASU. The likelihood is you probably don't have a lot of the cold weather clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, oh, clothing.
So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so there's a ton of things that when people start the new career, yeah, they're going to get into debt. So let's figure out how to get them out of debt. Clearly, they're not going to pay off their credit cards in one fell swoop. Johnny, if I said you had $8,000 of credit card debt, how long would it take you to pay that off?
Well, if I look at it as a game, I could probably do 8 months.
Okay. So the average person, let's say a year, it's going to take them a year if you do it one bite at a time to get out of the credit card debt. So we're not going to do this tomorrow. This is a game of how do I get my debt down to zero rolling debt? You can have debt.
Zero rolling debt.
Yep. I expect you to, like, again, you have the same game I do. I put everything I can on a credit card, and it's an airline credit card. Now, why do I do an airline credit card? Families in Wisconsin, flying kids back and forth. So all of a sudden, if I can put everything on an airline card and get miles and then use those free miles for the miles for free tickets, okay, I'm willing to put all of my money on that card because that's what I need for my lifestyle as long as I pay for it each and every month. If I paid 19% interest on balances, would those airline tickets be free?
Oh.
No. So I can't carry a balance because otherwise that whole game becomes I'm the big loser.
Then, yeah, you lost.
So I try to run absolutely everything. I've got, you know, utility bills, gas, groceries, even insurance goes through there. Everything I can gamifies into that credit card, and then that credit card is paid off at the end of the month. Guess what? Those airline tickets that I fly back and forth to, I get to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But who am I really saying thank you to?
Well, you put in the work.
No, unfortunately, I'm saying thank you to the people that are carrying the credit card balances because you and I know the credit card companies are
the people that aren't gaming it. They're the ones getting stuck with the bill.
You said you get, what benefit do you get? You get cash back. Right?
Yeah, so mine is pretty cool. I like it. It's the Apple card. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Nope.
But so I use Apple Pay for a lot of stuff in my business. So it automatically goes back to my Apple Pay. So I have an Apple card, and then it gives me cash on my Apple Pay right there. Like, I could see the percentage, what I did. And then depending on where you shop or what you get, it has different percentages. But I immediately get that money right back.
So what do you think? I'm sure you know, but in 2021, so last year, how much did you get back from that card?
Oh, I don't know. I just started it. This on the Apple card, this was about, like, I got this 3 months ago.
Okay. So do you know year to date?
I could look it up.
Oh, God, you're killing me.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
No, that's fine. But if you think about it, you're going to get that reward because other people are not playing the game and using those to the best of their ability. And unfortunately, that's why those cards are out there. They're not going to give you the cash back. They're not going to give me the free airline miles unless somebody's paying the high interest rates. I would love to help everybody get out of those high interest rates and do exactly what we're doing. But to the average person, it's going to take you a year to get out of debt. Guess what? When's the best time to start?
Now.
The best time would have been last year.
Yeah.
The second best time is right now.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to because at some point you're going to have to do it. So you may as well start now. And you know what? If I want to lose 10 pounds, I don't need to start tomorrow. I probably should start today. I could have started yesterday, but I should start today. And you know what? In 6 months, I'm going to like myself way better if I want to lose 10 pounds.
Yes, and then you would like yourself better if you're playing this game. So when you mentioned this about how much and percent, numbers is not my thing. I've hated. I'm not a numbers guy. But if I'm seeing I'm in the plus, and if I'm actually making it, that's where I get like, wow, I did it today. Right. It's just like, okay, I'm getting back. I'm playing it. So as long as I know I'm winning, that's it. So to keep in the stats and the figures and stuff, not so good at, but I know that, okay, I game the system and I'm winning.
It's in the end, it's very easy. It's a plus or minus.
Plus or minus. That's I have to simplify it that much because if I did try to do it with the numbers and then my stomach gets sick and I'm starting to think it.
Well,
so that's just me.
But see, there's where you haven't turned it into a game. Like if I said I do a one-page personal budget and I look at everything on one piece of paper and I can still do it with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the page, percentage-wise, what percent did you save? That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, here's the choice. Can you save 5% of your income next month?
Could I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will you?
I'm going to – you've challenged me. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to be at your office or Tom's, and we're going to figure this out.
And did y'all hear that pause, that slight pause that he had? He's like, oh, he's putting me on the spot here. But, okay, save 5%. And if you could do that for the next 2, 3, 4 months, you'd have some extra money put away. And then you get to say, okay, can I challenge myself to go 6 or 7 or 10? You know, and I know you could never do it. I know it's beyond your means. But what would it look like if you could save 20% of your income for the next 20 years?
Wow.
Would that not be one of those life-changing things that you set yourself up in a different way? And I'm not saying you go from 0 to 20 immediately, but could you challenge yourself to go 5, then 6, and then as you start making more money, and here's the thing that everybody forgets, the two best things that typically happen is your income typically goes up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your debt on fixed rate balances typically goes down. So if I give you a 30-year fixed mortgage today, fixed, is your payment going to change?
No.
No. So over the next 10, 15 years, as your income goes up, percentage-wise, that mortgage payment is less percentage of your income, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes easier to save money because you've fixed your debt. That's the thing I want everybody to look at for mortgages.
And I want to do it because I want to have money at the end of this, and I want to be at one of these trailer park, well, not the trailer parks, but the RV parks,
mm-hmm.
playing shuffleboard. And yeah, drinking at 9 in the morning, getting some Bloody Marys.
Come
and
on, you're already drinking at 9 in the morning. It's fine.
And going around on one of those three-wheel bikes and just mm-hmm. having a good time. So the challenge is accepted because I need the money to be able to do that at the end of my...
It's all possible. So for anybody listening, if you or you have friends, family, coworkers that have some questions, call me at the office, 247-9089. And again, there's a group of people, if you have served, are serving, or anybody in your family has ever served, our hats are off and our hearts go out to you. Thank you for protecting this country, and thank you for giving us the freedoms to be on the radio. This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.